855-577-2001.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
America, welcome to our show. It is Saturday, March 6th, 2010. A lot of good stuff going on here. Matt is in the control room, ready to answer the phones. The number for our weekend show is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. The chat rooms are open. The webcam is running. All systems are going. We're ready to just do what we're going to do today. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here. When I get ready to do these shows, I'll plug into the what's called the Comrex access system to GCN in order to be ready to do my show from here on the island of Oahu. And because I will check in early so that the control room technicians know I'm being a good little boy, I'll be listening to the show that precedes this one. And today I tune in, and they're talking about somebody having sex with goats, and one of the two hosts is expressing shock and disgust at it. And in our present day and age, yeah, we would view it that way. But I wanted to point out, historically, these things are kind of a matter of fashion. And when they unearthed Pompeii, they dug it out from all the volcanic ash and everything, one of the artifacts they found was this statue of Pan engaged in carnal relations with a goat. It was considered so shocking at the time, it was actually concealed from the public for many, many, many years. It's finally being put on display with the understanding that the people of Pompeii had very different attitudes about sexuality than we do here in the United States of America. In fact, if anything, you know, during the push for war, I see our society becoming much more sexually repressive, along the same lines that we saw in Nazi Germany, just before they started big mistake number two. But back in Pompeii, it was very much an anything goes. Pompeii was kind of the Las Vegas of the ancient world. It was a party town, and, you know, they had bordellos all over the place, and you could pretty much get anything you wanted, much like they're doing in the papal apartments right now, according to a story that broke this morning. We'll get into that a little bit later on here. I'm also having quite a giggle over this story about the fake pilot that you heard in the news break. Apparently, this Swedish pilot has been, for the last 13 years, working as a commercial pilot for all of Europe's airlines. He's logged something like 10,000 hours of commercial passenger jet piloting, and they only just now figured out he only ever had a private pilot's license to fly little tiny Cessnas. So they arrested him and dragged him out of the cockpit. I don't know why. After 10,000 hours and 13 years and no accidents, this guy's qualified. So if I were the judge in that case, I'd say, okay, go get the certification and go back to work, because good pilots are hard to come by these days here. Now, on a more serious note, coming out of the news break here, they're talking, obviously, about the Iraq elections. There's a lot of these terror bombings going on, and you need to look at them very closely and say, you know, who do they favor? Which side gets the bombing? Are they angering people to support the U.S.-installed puppet regime? Seems to be the case, because the bombings are always being blamed on the opposition party. Remember, the United States is desperate to keep their puppet government in power in Iraq. And they're still remembering the tremendous embarrassment that happened when they finally allowed the Palestinians to have a vote, and the Palestinians promptly voted Hamas into power. So Israel and the U.S. had to turn around and pretend the election never happened, put in the Palestinian Authority and say, this is now the recognized government of Palestine, so forth and so on. There is a real possibility that absent massive vote fraud and bombings and all the Iraqi expats who are voting absentee here in the United States, the Iraqi people could choose a whole new government, one that the United States does not approve of, which would certainly derail plans to get our troops out of there by the end of next year. So we're going to be watching that election with a great deal of interest, and certainly the possibility of massive vote fraud in order to perpetuate the installed puppet government cannot be dismissed out of hand. Now, speaking of politics and corruptions, we're continuing to hear about all these so-called democratic scandals and, you know, masses resigning. And there was a story that came out today, Democrats' ethical lapses could threaten hold on power. And it dawned on me, because yesterday, if you will remember, when I was going down all these little scandals and, you know, sexual harassment and the rest of it, I said, well, you know, it's typical political behavior. Is it really news? Are we being distracted from something? And I think what's going on here is the Democratic National Committee understands that there's going to be a heck of a backlash because Obama failed to keep any of his promises. The economy is still in the Al-Qaeda and getting worse. And they're probably going to take a major clubbing during the primary season and going into the fall elections. And I think this is a classic case of pre-spin. Because I think what the Democrats are doing here is they're setting up this public awareness of all these minor scandals. So when they start to not do as well as they might in the elections, and especially in the primaries, they'll put the blame on that. Oh, well, this is the backlash because of the sexual harassment. This is the backlash because this guy tried to get the girlfriend of one of his aides to back off domestic abuse charges. And, you know, this guy, you know, was caught in a gay tryst, and this guy, blah, 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 blah. And the idea is to keep the public's attention and focus off what is really going to bring the Democrats down this fall, which is Obama promised to end the wars. The wars are still going. They're still trying to figure out a way to get us into Iran. He promised he was going to end the torture and maltreatment of prisoners. That's still going on. He promised all kinds of things about the economy and no taxes and transparency, none of which he's kept. The country, Obama's poll numbers have taken only a year to fall as far as it took George Bush 8 years. I mean, that's how bad it is going. There's going to be a huge anti-incumbent backlash this fall, and inevitably, because the Democrats are in power, the anti-incumbent backlash is going to hit them harder than it hits anybody else. So they're trying to sort of like say, well, yeah, we're dealing with all these minor scandals, because what they really want to do, going into the election season, they want to keep the attention off of the real core issues that do actually affect your life. The wars, the economy, the unending aid and obeisance to Israel, these are the real issues that affect your daily life. So this is, in fact, as I suggested yesterday, this is a distraction. It's called a limited hangout. They're going to use little tiny embarrassing scandals that are confined to just individual politicians to sort of explain away the coming losses in order to prevent public awareness that it is the Democratic Party as a whole, it is the political system as a whole that is the problem. And so that's a little subtle bit of propaganda you need to be aware of here. Now, turning to the economy, regulators shut down banks in 4 states last night, making 26 U.S. bank failures this year, or we're averaging basically 13 a month. And so far, you know, it's we're not off to a good start here. Over in Phoenix, they're seeing foreclosures increasing. They're basically saying there's not going to be a recovery. There will be no recovery anytime soon in Phoenix there. Now, my wife is who's a composer. She likes to write sacred choral music, and she's at a convention in Arizona for choir conductors, and apparently is having a lot of interest in her music. Nobody has any money to spend on it, but they like what she's doing, so that's kind of a good thing. But she was saying the hotel where she was staying, you know, on the website it looks really good, but once you're there you realize it's just made out of the cheapest finishings and surfaces you can find. It's worn out. It's not being maintained. We're seeing these signs of economic rot all over the place here. In New Hampshire, which is the state where I spent my childhood, January foreclosures have hit a record there. It's all over. Norwich, Connecticut, Norwich, New London area, foreclosures, delinquencies are increasing and rising. You forget what the TV is telling you about recovery. It's not happening. We're not seeing it. The problems are continuing, and they're escalating. As we pointed out earlier in the week, even ABC News was casting doubt on the official government jobs report, saying it doesn't line up with the fact that payroll companies are saying payrolls are declining much faster. And this idea that, you know, the rate of unemployment has slowed down is obviously arrived at by the same kind of statistical manipulations with which they claimed that, you know, global warming is responsible for the coldest winter on record here. So you've got to look with your own eyes at what's going on around here. The government has stated their strategy is to conceal the scale of the economic problem and try and cheer you up into spending more money. That's their plan. That's all they can come up with. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
So getting back to the economy, and one of the people in our chat room is saying that Maui, the next island over that way, is also seeing record foreclosures and bankruptcies. We're seeing it here on the island of Oahu. Our economy is in a total mess. We were in serious trouble even before the recognized recession, because all of the abuses of TSA have just destroyed tourism to Hawaii. Nobody wants to come to Hawaii anymore. Nobody wants to come to our tropical island paradise. Because they're treated like POWs getting in and getting out. And people are tired of it. I told you the story the other day where my wife, when she went to her little convention, we bought these little TSA-approved locks. And the TSA still cut it off with bolt cutters, threw it away. So apparently they can't even recognize their own symbols on the locks. All right, getting back to the economy here. As reported earlier in the week, the Los Angeles Unified School District is laying off another 5,200 people, mostly teachers. We know one of the teachers who worked there. She's on the verge of losing her house. She's been teaching all of her life. Boom, gone. Just completely gone here. Shaw's grocery store is selling all of their Connecticut locations, and they're laying off almost 1,000 people. General Dynamics and Northrop are getting ready to do massive layoffs at their shipyards because there has been a pullback on warship building for the United States, mostly because obviously the next war that they're planning to get into is mostly on the land. We're seeing shipyard layoffs from shipyards that built cargo ships because orders for those have gone into decline. There are cargo carriers literally being stored in floating at anchor in various locations around the world. We have had tankers that will moor off the coast of Oahu, right out the window here. We can see them. They're there for weeks at a time. I presume the crews are on shore having a little bit of a vacation, but they've got nowhere to go and no cargo to carry. You can tell by looking at the plimsoll lines that they're not carrying anything. They're just empty ships riding at anchor, waiting for another opportunity to do some reasonable work here. 15,000 San Francisco workers got their layoff notices yesterday. The government is promising to try and hire most of them back on a part-time basis, which not only means fewer hours and a lower paycheck, but also means that they're not going to get a lot of the full-time perks and benefits from the union contracts. So they're being reclassified to save the city money. And finally, we're beginning to get these reports from all across the country where more and more cities are starting to charge for the services that you thought you were paying taxes for. Because your property taxes are supposed to go for police and fire department and all that. But now, if they actually respond to a call, you will be billed for the services rendered. So it's a double whammy. You've already paid for all of this, but they're going to charge you for it again. And we're seeing this time and time again, the privatization where your taxes will be used to build a section of highway. And then the city or the county turns around and sells it to a private corporation who puts up toll booths and starts to charge you a toll to use the road that your taxes already bought and paid for. So it's just another way of pillaging the population, and that's exactly what's going on right now. And it is the wrong way to be going. Because as I said earlier in the week, right now the American economy is best simulated with the image of a boat with 10 holes in the bottom and only 5 corks. And everything the government is doing right now basically amounts to yanking a cork out of one leak and hammering it into another in full view of the press cameras and making a campaign speech about, I am addressing the problem, vote for me again. Everyone's talking about the mounting debt and all these other problems, and what nobody is addressing is the situation is that our nation can't make anything to sell anymore. And we're not going to get an economy back until we make something that somebody wants to buy. A quality product at a good price. And the only way you're going to get a quality product made in this country at a good price is to remove this incredible overburden of taxation. We are being taxed into paralysis. And as I pointed out earlier, the main difference between the United States and the other industrialized nations We pay the same amount of taxes, but in those other countries, the government turns around and spends that tax money back on the people. You get free universal health care. You get higher education. You get good roads. You get good infrastructure. You get reliable trains. Get reliable power, reliable whatever, to keep the nation productive and running. In this nation, the money is taken from us. It's given to Wall Street. It's given to Israel. It is used to buy big, shiny bombs. And we, the American people, are left to pay for our own health care, our own higher education, deal with crumbling roads, collapsing bridges, brush fires, failed flood control. And that is why our nation is in such terrible trouble. We have a federal government that thinks it is its divine right to loot the American people and not have to spend anything back on us. The federal government's attitude right now is, well, you guys have to figure out how to make the money to give us. We'll just have to flog you harder until you come up with something here. Now, apparently Barack Obama is getting ready to grab another huge chunk of Western land under one of these various environmental programs, Department of Interior, under the Antiquities Act of 1906. The White House is going to grab 10 million acres of land in 9 western states. He's going to designate the land as national monuments, which will mean that those states will not be able to use the land. They will not be used for ranching. They will not be used for mining. They will not be used for timber. They will not be used for anything. They're going to be national monuments. Nobody knows what they're monuments to, but it's a national monument. And, you know, Jim DeMint got up and started talking about this whole thing, and he says that Obama is placing wild animals above the needs of the American people. It's got nothing to do with that, Jim. This is a continuation of a scam that the federal government has been running ever since the Nixon administration. And that is that every time the government needs to borrow more money, they got to come up with collateral. Nobody trusts the U.S. government anymore to repay its loans without collateral. And we ran out of gold to collateralize the government's borrowing back again during the Nixon administration. And so what this 10 million acres of land is going to be, they're going to say it's a national monument. It isn't. It's collateral. It's collateral on more government borrowing. And if you ever look at just how much of your public lands are already in hock for the out-of-control federal borrowing, you will be stunned. You will be stunned. And Jim DeMint is trying to block this, maybe for the wrong reasons, but he's absolutely right. This federal land grab has got to stop. I'm not even sure this is constitutional for the government to be able to grab land and say, this is our land. The government doesn't own it. We, the people, own it. And we never agreed to have it placed as collateral for the government to borrow money to buy more bonds. We're going to be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard hit.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
All right, and welcome back to the show here, and we do seem to be having more than our share of gremlins there in the control room here. I just got an interesting email. Somebody is saying, you know, when you're looking out the window, what are you thinking about? I'm not actually looking out the window. The window is over there, and through that I can see Pearl Harbor. There I've got a TV set, and I keep an eye on various news channels. I got a little remote here that I fondle. And I flip back and forth looking for any breaking news or general silliness. And interesting that you should mention that, because I was flipping past one of the movie channels. I'm not going to say which one. And it just struck me, because I'm not actually watching the movie. It just struck me about how much of the actual screen of the movie that you're paying cable to watch was obliterated by all the little bugs and ads they put all over it now. And I remember a few years ago when it just began, and they would call it a bug, which the little logo that they would put in the corner about what you were watching, and it just seems to be growing, and now it's the lower thirds and the upper thirds. And this, and it's really to the point where, you know, I really get angry. I won't even watch a movie now where they've got all the stuff over the front of the screen because it's just too distracting. All right. I want to get back to some serious things here. Oh, good. Karen from Oregon has just called in. Karen, aloha. Welcome to the show. I'm going to apologize up front. I still did not get a chance to read the Articles of Freedom. I'm going to get to it after the show today, but I had some other stuff come up with technical issues. Anyway, Karen, what's the latest update? I know you got another conference call after our show today, correct?
I do, and actually, I wanted to call in. I'm still wading through it myself, Michael. It lays out a bunch of the infractions early, and then it gets into more specifics on what to do. But you were talking about the land grab, and it does also address that, and it is unconstitutional. It says that the United States has assumed control of lands within several of the western states far beyond the authority granted to it by the Constitution. And when they assume control, they do so by calling the seized land such names as the Wild Lands Project, Heritage Areas, Land Management, Wolf and Bear Reintroduction, Rails and Trials. Anyway, it is unconstitutional, and that's another thing that's covered here. So if you've got a much better grasp of the political issues than I do, I have to struggle with this. Mm-hmm. I get bare bones, but it's a big mouthful, but it certainly covers illegal immigration. It covers all the infractions to the state sovereignty. And it actually, when you get into it, it says that everything that's unconstitutional, including all the treaties, we can declare ourselves sovereign citizens and ignore them because they're not within the constitutional authority, which is the supreme law of the land.
Well, the problem with that, in theory, that's correct. You know, we all have a natural right when the government has exceeded its constitutional authority, we can simply say, I don't recognize your right to come into my home without a warrant, so forth and so on. Unfortunately, the government is getting ready to reach the point where it is going to enforce its will on us all. If they can't trick us into it, they're just going to go out there and start shooting people. And I hate to say it, but as we get down to the last great days of the United States Empire, the decline and fall of the American Empire, we're going to see some very ugly behavior on the part of the government, because there's one thing that people in government are always able to do is convince themselves that what their own good is what's good for the rest of the nation. And that's why we have a government that even now is pillaging the American people pillaging the American people to drop money all over Wall Street banks.
Yeah, that's part of what's listed here, too. And I agree, and I guess that's why I feel that it's so urgent for people to recognize that this may be our last chance for doing something peacefully. And I'm hoping that I'm wrong there. But I keep seeing, like you do, Michael, an upping of the stakes, little things here and there, the Pentagon shooting, the stack attack, the underwear bomber. Who knows what all this is leading to, but It seems like more and more of a crackdown, more and more of being dependent on the government to tell us what's good, what's right, and we have to start educating ourselves, and that's why it's so important, folks, to go to this Articles of Freedom, to at least read them, at least the first couple of pages where you get a general overview. The rest of it takes time, and one thing is that we can be helped on the strike for those 4 days with some educational programs, and we'll be learning more about that as the week goes on and probably the next 2 weeks, and we should have some exciting things, and your wife, I believe, will be very interested in that Stand Up and Sing for America.
Well, I'll have her take a look at it. She actually wrote a couple of pieces of music about a year and a half ago, which she called her Sedition Project. And those were things like the Outsourced Blues, which we had in our bump music for a while, and a couple of others. We're probably going to start bringing those back because they were perhaps just a hair ahead of their time here. But getting back to the situation about states' rights and federal government rights and these land grabs, again, the bottom line is this is theft from the American people by deception, because we were all told that it was okay for us to surrender access to our own public lands. And that's an important point for everybody listening to this show to remember. The government does not own these lands. You do.
Well, you know.
Let me finish this point. Okay? We've been told that it was okay for us to be banned from going into our own public lands because we're somehow doing something for the planet and for the environment. Then we find out that what's really going on is that these lands, these public lands that are the property of the American people and their mineral rights on them as well, were being set aside as collateral for government borrowing. Now, in the case of Utah, I really want to get this in here. We've all heard recently how Utah, in order to save their educational budget, is going to go to a 3-year high school program. And what most people don't remember is that when Utah was granted statehood, part of their statehood agreement involved these very large coal mines in the state of Utah. They were set aside to be the funding source for Utah's educational system in perpetuity. When Bill Clinton created the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, it blocked off Utah from those very coal mines. It was a violation of Utah's statehood agreement. It forced Utah to start taking federal money to support their schools, and it forced American companies to actually go overseas to buy low-sulfur coal. It was just an absolute disaster. But the point was they needed another national monument to put on the list of assets placed in trust to the nation's creditors, or more to the point, to the government's creditors, because I don't think the government's debts are the debts of the people, especially since so much of it has been spent on wars, which we did not approve of, and, of course, on repression of the people themselves, which includes all this infrastructure to read our email and listen to our phone calls and loot our computers. This is all odious debt. And if the loans, which our public lands are collateral for, are odious debt, then so too is the claim of collateral, which is why my position is that these public lands ought to be returned to the public right now. They can't be pledged as collateral on an odious debt.
I agree, and I didn't know that about Utah. I do know that here in Oregon, where we're staying, it's a beautiful piece of property, and there are 4 good-sized ponds. One is a lot bigger. It's almost a small lake size. And the owners here, while they own the land, the state owns the water, and they cannot use the water as they see fit. And even though he'll say, well, yeah, it looks like my water, and it isn't. They have to jump through all kinds of hoops, not to mention they passed 67 and 68, and depending on the excessive taxation fees that will come down there, they're also possibly in danger of not being able to meet now new taxation and will lose their property. And taxation is also addressed in these Articles of Freedom, and they give, they're very specific about saying to take it away from property and pretty much everything that you own personally, your land. And if you think about when we buy a vehicle and we're the sole owner, why do we have to pay taxes every year to reaffirm that we own it? You know, the licensing fees, all of this, it's so far out of control. And this at least is a body of work that addresses most of the issues that we're all concerned about. And it's just something that the more I learn, the more I am convinced that the time to act is really coming, folks. 41 days.
It's 41 here.
Days
it's,
to discover
it's
what
right
it
here
is.
And right now. Karen, we got to let you go. We're at the end of the segment. Good luck with your conference call later on today. And please call us and join us again next week. Let's keep this thing moving forward. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider What Really Happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're on our last segment of hour number one before the news break here. Just wrapping up here with the economy that basically looking at the percentage of gross domestic product to external debt, default is becoming inevitable for large numbers of countries. It's this huge domino effect. And everybody's saying, with all the taxation going on, why are these governments so deeply in debt? And the reason is, and this is a fundamental truth of every Western nation, the problem with the reserve system of banking, which is a legalized counterfeiting operation, those paper notes are not backed up by anything at all, except the promise of the government to tax you for their use. The first paper note goes into circulation, more money is owed to the private reserve banking system than is actually in existence. The overwhelming majority of the trillions and trillions of dollars of debt owed to the banks never existed in the first place. It's all made up fictitious money. It didn't really exist. Prior to the Federal Reserve, when the money was controlled, the volume of money was controlled by the amount of silver and gold that you had, and most people lived their lives without ever dealing with a bank, the interest charged on business loans or home mortgages could be taken out of commerce activity and given to the bank. But once the banks were put in charge of issuing all public currency at interest, and once they lobbied the government to make sure that everybody had to go through the bank to get paid, to pay their bills, to do everything for a huge fee, and the fees are going up, by the way, we reached a situation where there was never going to be enough money to repay all the money that's owed to the bank, because all the currency in circulation represents a loan from the bank rather than a unit of value issued by the government. And that is the reason all of these governments are so much in debt. It's a bookkeeping debt. It's not real. They didn't really take this money and spend it. It's the accumulating interest on the fact that we have private banks issuing the public currency. And ultimately, that is the reason all of these nations are going to fail. And so what's the solution? Well, the bankers are going to get together and declare a new world war to crush the only competing system, the Islamic banking system, and force a new global reserve on everybody, which is like taking the Titanic, backing it up, and whacking the iceberg again and hoping that things will turn out a little bit better. It's just absolute insanity. If you're going to have a global banking system, it's got to operate on a completely different set of principles than the Federal Reserve that we have now. We've had three federal banks in this country. All three have brought the nation to the edge of ruin. How many times do you have to go whacking your thumb with a hammer before you realize you're holding the nail wrong? Anyway, now somebody just sent me a news story, and this one just infuriated me. Because remember I was talking a couple of weeks ago about how during the American election season, we are seeing so many supposedly American political candidates supposedly running for offices in the United States of America, and yet the first words out of their mouth continue to be Israel, 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 Israel. And so here we have at the Mercury News coming through Associated Press, and the headline reads, "Support for Israel punctuates first GOP debate." And it basically goes on to talk about how Tom Campbell is sniping with his opponents, Carly Fiorina and Chuck DeVore, about, you know, who can grovel Israel more than the other. And they're saying, you know, you're against Israel or you're anti-Semitic or you're this or that. It doesn't really matter. It shouldn't matter in the United States of America. I have one rule going into this election. If a politician is taking money from Israel, dump them. Don't vote for them. If they're even talking about Israel, dump them. The United States of America needs political leaders who will put America first, second, and third. Israel has to come way, 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 way down the list. And I am offended that politicians vying for my vote and support in this election think that talking about Israel is going to win my vote. It's not going to happen. And it's not necessarily that it's Israel, it's the issue. I don't want to vote for any American political candidate who is spending so much time obsessing about a foreign country. If we saw American politicians getting up and arguing over which one of them was a greater friend to Australia, wouldn't we think they were out of their minds? Yet in the eyes of the American media, with its own pro-Israel bias, it's perfectly appropriate to focus on American candidates' love for a foreign government. One that stands accused of major war crimes at the moment, I might add. Now, as a side note regarding Carly Fiorina, you know, they're touting her as the former Hewlett-Packard chief executive. While she was chief executive at Hewlett-Packard, the quality of their products took a nosedive. When I was trying to start my little animation business here, I bought a lot of Hewlett-Packard equipment because way back when Mr. Hewlett and Mr. Packard still ran the place, they did put out the best products in the world. I still have my HP 28C pocket calculator around here somewhere, which is old enough to vote now, and it runs perfectly. I've never had a problem with it. It is a wonderful little machine. So we bought a bunch of Hewlett-Packard equipment for our first company. It almost destroyed us. We had CD burners from Hewlett-Packard that were lasting a week before they died. Yes, they're under warranty, but how many times do I have to drive down to CompUSA to exercise the warranty before I get a unit that I can rely on? And the reason that Fiorina left Hewlett-Packard was the HP stockholders realized that the brand name had been trashed. They had value engineered the product so much. Huge problems. We had desktop computers from HP kept locking up right out of the box. Turned out to be a motherboard problem. Was completely unfixable. We'll never do Hewlett-Packard ever again after that. And that's the bottom line there. Okay, so we're almost to the top of the hour here. I cannot tell you how angry it makes me to see American politicians campaign for American votes and American donations by waving around the flag of Israel. The reason I was never able to get behind Sarah Palin, even before she opened her mouth and showed what a ditz she is, was the first time they started puffing her up in the media, and they showed pictures of her in the governor's office in Alaska, and there was a flag of Israel on display there. And it was at that point I said, okay, this lady has her priorities totally screwed up. I don't want any more American politicians with flags of Israel in their office. So one of my chat room people is saying, if Fiorina can't run a company, what is she doing in politics? Well, look at George Bush. How many companies he ran into ruin before he ran for political office? Politics is where you go if you can't make it in the business world. Anyway, I'm going to finish up this hour talking about the Pentagon shooter. We are seeing a nonstop demonization. He's a right-wing anti-government terrorist and so forth and so on. And I really wanted to make a comment here. I mean, they're demonizing the guy. Like Joe Stack, they're turning him into such a villain because they're terrified that the American people might actually want to take a close look at what his motivation was. It's like when Joe Stack crashed his plane into the IRS office. The government didn't want people reading his actual note about why he did it, because he made a lot of sense to a lot of people. And they're demonizing Beto because they don't want the American people taking a look and saying, why was he opposed to the government, especially at a time when polls show two-thirds of Americans say they're very angry with the federal government. And I want to point out, for all these people screaming white right-wing extremism as they try and link Beto to the 9/11 truth movement, that it is a Republican president who's thought to have been part of the 9/11 plot. And while Bush was still in office, people who were doubting the official story of 9/11 were being labeled as liberal kooks. This is not a right-wing, left-wing issue. This is a government gone completely out of control and an American people fed up with it. And that is really the issue here. And they're trying to pound on this guy and Joe Stack and all the rest of that because they understand these are the cracks in the dam. These are the first cracks that tell you that the ability to control the American people is starting to crumble. And they're scared. They're very scared of this. And they're out there, they're using name-calling and smears. Oh, you don't want to think what these people were thinking. That makes you a bad human being. The next step is going to be the government declaring 260 million Americans who don't work for the federal government to be terrorists. We're going to take a break for news and commercials. We'll be right back.
GetTheTea.com.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to our second hour. Phone lines are open, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We finished up our last segment talking about the Pentagon shooter. The media is just trying to demonize the guy. And let's be very clear, what he did was bad, just walking up and starting to shoot people. And I know there are people out there trying to say, was it false flag? Was he Manchurian candidate? It doesn't really matter. The important part of the story is that the corporate media and the government are using this situation to basically demonize the truth movement, the patriot movement. They're trying to link him to everybody. Right-wing, the right-wingers are saying he's left-wing. The left-wingers are saying he's right-wing. And the bottom line is they're trying to use this to basically obscure the fact that maybe this Pentagon shooter, like Joe Stack, like the rioting students at Berkeley, have got some legitimate grievances. Remember what I said in the first hour about all these scandals to sort of take the focus off the fact that there are some real issues going into this election, having to do with the wars and the economy? The same thing is being done here. The last thing the government wants you to do is take a look at maybe these guys. Their actions were inappropriate, but maybe they had some legitimate reasons for feeling that what they did was the only option they had left. And that's what the government doesn't want you thinking about. So they're saying he's mentally ill and he's this and he's that and all the rest of it. But it doesn't alter the fact that we are a nation that has been pushed to the brink. And like I said, the rioting students, that's another one. They're trying to dismiss them and say, oh, they want free money. No, they don't. They want their money and their parents' money spent on them. See, that's the thing. There's no free money in the government. The government doesn't have any money. Any money that the government is handing out, they took from somebody else. And what the students on all these college campuses are saying is, you have taxed us and our parents to the edge of poverty, supposedly to take care of this country. Now is the time to hold the government to account. Either you take care of us, you know, or the deal is off. That's the issue. Nobody is asking for free money from the government. We are asking the government spend the money they take from us on America and stop wasting it on wars and Israel and Wall Street. That's all we're saying. And that is a legitimate grievance. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Solomon Brazil. Aloha, Solomon. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind?
Sarava, my querido hermano Ribeiro. Good morning to your distinguished audience. And I want to assure you I'm still angry because of the chain of events that we face since long, long, long time ago. And also because it's becoming more and more difficult to get in touch with you. I don't know what happened, but I really want to share and contribute my voice in this forceful exile to your efforts, and assure you that I'm assumed that also that you want to hear from your audience living abroad, right?
Yes, I do, but you know, you haven't called in for a while that I'm aware.
No, I'm trying to explain to you. It is 3 weeks ago that at first I think it was NSA playing games with your phone lines. Mm-hmm. And twice in the past, the switching board directly passed me to your board without passing through Matt or through Otman. So you didn't even realize that there was someone waiting to call.
There are some technical issues. I've had other people write in and say that they sit waiting on hold and so forth. That's an equipment issue.
I didn't abandon you.
Solomon, let me explain something. This is an equipment issue. Please don't take it personally, all right? But you're not on it.
No, brother Rivero, if I call you, it's because I really care about you, and you mean a lot to many people around the world, and you are worthy the call.
Thank you. Okay, now what's on your mind today, though? Because I know you're paying for this phone call.
Things, but I want to make a clear one first, because We really need to keep the eye on the ball. What happened in Chile,
yes,
and people probably don't realize it, don't pay attention, but please pay attention in the future. Chile is a window of opportunities to open a new United States military base in South America. And I say this because just in 4 days, a new government is taking office in Chile, and the new government is just a legacy of Augusto Pinochet, disguised as civilians. So it won't be very hard to imagine that in all this mess, like the, in Haiti, we put boots on the ground directly because we consider Haiti is part of our territory. We can also entice, and with the help of the Chilean government, to bring help to reconstruct and rebuild Chile, and in the process of that, also get a lease for, I don't know, three, four, four, five military bases in the United States in Chile, and have a very, very useful base to take the raw resources that are in South America in a case of an emergency.
Yeah, well, we have been noticing that the United States government seems to be reasserting its control over South America, and there were so many abuses before. As you say, Pinochet was just one of the more visible ones. But it does seem like the U.S. is just acting just like Nazi Germany. They're going out, they're projecting power. A lot of people don't realize it, but when Nazi Germany was first coming to power, they were actually in Mexico trying to basically, subvert and take over there. And and definitely down in South America. So it's all about power projection. And it is really kind of a sickening situation to understand that without a formal declaration of war, anywhere, the United States is on a war footing. The civilian population is being neglected. They're being taxed into poverty in order to fund this gigantic war machine that is running all over the globe, invading countries left and right. And unfortunately, because the rest of the world's industrialized nations have picked up on what's going on and they recognize appeasement will not work, we're going to wind up in a world war. And the U.S. is going to ultimately lose it, even with all their nuclear weapons, which they may well go ahead and use again.
Brother Rivera, one little thing more. I understand you, your point of view and the way that you analyze the things. I have some kind of disagreement in thinking that empires collapse. In my humble opinion, and after searching all the history, I think that they just go through a metamorphosis. They change externally, but internally it's the same thing. Because otherwise, in the last 2,000 years, we have already got done with royal houses and oligarchies. But we are not. We are still living the same kind of thing. And the thing that is going to happen in the future in the United States of America is that they will externally kind of change, but it will still be a corporate oligarchy military dictatorship because, as an example, the Nazi Germany just metamorphosized to what today is the military taking boots on Afghanistan. The Roman Empire became the Vatican, and the Japanese Empire today is the industrial slavery Japan working for the United States and also putting boots on the ground. So I think that empires are not going to collapse, and the United States is not going to collapse. It's just going to change the external form, but that's all. They will still keep the same.
I fundamentally disagree, because what you're drastically oversimplifying the fact that as one center of power collapses, other centers of power, move into that vacuum. And so, again, looking at the Russian republics, communism collapsed, the USSR collapsed, took its debts with it. Yes, there are still people and power and wealth in Russia, but it's a different group of people. I mean, that's the whole point of politics, is this constant, for those people who feel they want to have more money and power than, they need just to be comfortable, this is the constant fight back and forth. We see these cycles of going between extreme tyranny to extreme freedom and back and forth, extreme conservatism back and forth to extreme liberalism. And these things oscillate. They're, unfortunately, sadly, politics is the most unstable process of all. And so we never really see a state of constant, how should I put this? There's never a constant political process in the nation. It's always basically caroming off whatever the limits happen to be. Part of the process of being a political commentator, and indeed being one who may be viewed as a little bit extremist, is we're defining where those walls of discussion are. And saying, this is where we can take the discussion going into the future here. At this particular point, our crisis is primarily economic, and the economic crisis is driving a political extremism within our own government, who views their own survival as the highest priority of all for the country. Obviously, we, the American people, don't agree with that. I do think the present U.S. governmental system is going to collapse very, very soon. We just need to be aware of what might rise to try and take its place. Solomon, we've got a break for a commercial break.
Thank you very much
for the phone call. We'll talk to you again sometime down the road. We're going to break for commercials. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the Pentagon shooter. We're going to go to the phones. Malcolm in Texas. Aloha, Malcolm. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi. The Pentagon shooter had a history of bipolar disorder, and this wasn't ever brought up. And when those people are off their medications, they go into mania phases and are capable of anything. I know. I work with a lot of them.
Well, so have I, and not being bipolar does not automatically make you dangerous. And there are people who've been bipolar, you know, that did great artworks and wrote great music and have done a lot of very good things. So just being bipolar in and of itself
condemnation. Yeah, but Mike, I'm not saying that. I have coworkers that have that, and they're on medications, and they're very outstanding workers. What I'm saying is the media is packaging this guy up like he's a 9/11 truther. And they're not getting at some of the real issues that involve the shooting. Instead, they're trying to package him up, probably, so they can maybe do another false flag.
Well, you know, I don't even know that this one's a false flag. I mean, politicians, anything that happens, they're going to take advantage of to push whatever their agenda is. Something good happens, take credit. Something bad happens, blame the opposition. That's kind of a standard rule. I am not convinced that Joe Stack or this Pentagon shooter were false flags. I think these are Americans who've reached their breaking point. And whether you want to say he's a 9/11 truther or he's manic depressive, both of these things are pulling people's attention away from exactly why did they think they were doing what they were doing. Now, in Joe Stack's case, nobody agrees with what he did, crashing a plane into the Internal Revenue Service, but reading his letter, everybody understands why he did it. And so I think that's kind of what's going on here. We need to understand, you know, why this guy did what he did. And the idea of his being a 9/11 truther, that's hardly unique. The majority of Americans not getting a federal government paycheck doubt the official story. Are you going to start blaming people who run red lights on being 9/11 truthers? Are you going to start saying, oh, he's a litter bug because he doubts the official government story? That's a nonsensical linking that's going on there. But as far as being anti-government, again, recent polls show two-thirds of Americans describe themselves as very angry with the federal government. So there's hardly a commonality there where you can link them as some kind of a causal relationship. It just doesn't work. But they're trying to do it because they want to demonize anybody who doubts the official story about anything, and they want to keep people from actually looking at why this guy thought this was a necessary thing to do. And again, we're not condoning or agreeing with the actions, but we do need to understand what these people thought their motives were, because that is something that I think a lot of people do share.
I agree.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. All right. There we go. And I noticed, rather interestingly enough, that along with saying the Pentagon shooter, he's a 9/11, you know, truther, and he doubts the official story. So inevitably, they drag out a story about Ahmadinejad in Iran, and he's saying that 9/11 was a big hoax, in the hopes that because we've all been trained and conditioned like Pavlov's dogs to, you know, to hate Ahmadinejad, and he's the person we've got to hate, that if he doubts the official story, well then, we as loyal, patriotic Americans have to believe everything the U.S. government tells us about 9/11 and wave the flag, either of the United States or Israel, as hard as we can to prove what good little drones that we all are. And I don't think we're going to do that. Now, speaking of the flag of Israel, I want to get over there. We're actually running short of time already. As you know, Israel is mounting these operations at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, where they basically went in with rubber bullets, tear gas, and just basically went in and shot up the place during prayers on Friday, and a lot of Palestinians were injured. There was no reason for Israel to do this. It is a provocation. They're trying to get a reaction. By the way, when they talk about rubber bullets, they're not talking about the really big, oversized riot control rubber bullets that are used here in the United States. They're talking about a very tiny hard rubber bullet that actually does have a steel core to it. They can penetrate and cause a tremendous amount of injury. They're considered non-lethal because they don't penetrate as deeply as a lead round, but they're very nasty. And so Israel just walked into, basically, it's a church. It's a place of worship. How would you feel if somebody in a bunch of uniforms walked into your church tomorrow morning and started throwing tear gas at everybody? I think you'd be a little bit upset. And this is what Israel is doing at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And I think what's going on here is Israel is getting frustrated. They can't get Russia to go along with more sanctions against Iran. They can't get Russia to stop delivery of the S-300 missiles. Israel is having a very hard time convincing the American government to launch a new war against Israel's enemies in Iran because the U.S. government understands we, the American people, are fed up with all the wars. It's a 50-50 choice whether we're going to be shooting at the Iranians or at the federal government, even among the uniformed military. That's getting to be a problem. So I think Israel has just decided that they're just going to start, you know, let's go kick the Palestinians. We can't have a war with Iran. Let's go kick the Palestinians. Now, interestingly enough, we're again seeing in the news about Israel's very existence being threatened. They're back to waving existential threat. Oh, the enemies of Israel are against us. They're threatening to wipe the country out. Folks, this is a red flag warning. Every time Israel starts talking about existential threat, threats to their very existence, it means they're getting ready to attack somebody. Could be Lebanon, could be Syria, could be going back into Gaza, but absolutely means that Israel is going to attack somebody. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is the beginning of a ramp-up of provocations. Remember, during 2008, there was a six-month ceasefire with Hamas that was working. Then on November 4th, Election Day, 2008, Israel attacked without provocation into Gaza and killed six Hamas officials. The very next day, Hamas says, well, I guess the ceasefire is over. And Israel goes, aha, Hamas says the ceasefire is over. And they launched Operation Cast Lead. This is the way Israel works. They're going to go on with these provocations until somebody in Palestine strikes back. Then Israel and the obeisant American corporate media will point to that retaliation and say, that is the initiating event, and see, we have been attacked again, and we'll be off and running. This is the way Israel works. The war with Lebanon supposedly began when Lebanon kidnapped, or Hezbollah kidnapped, two Israeli soldiers. We then documented that these soldiers walked into Lebanon across the border in uniform with full military kit, walked into a Lebanese village and just stood there until they were arrested. And Israel said, they've kidnapped our soldiers. No, actually, your soldiers committed an act of war walking across the border. We've been hearing for weeks now how Israel's warplanes are violating Lebanese airspace every single day. Israel wants Lebanon to take a shot at them, because then Israel can claim, oh my goodness, the Lebanese are shooting at our planes. They're trying to create another war, which the U.S. will inevitably get dragged into at the very least. We will be paying for it. We will be paying for it. All right, we're going to take a break for commercials. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the latest scandal to rock the Vatican and what it means for God's opinion of gay prostitution. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, down to the last half hour of the program. Got a big military helicopter circling around overhead. And you know, they should listen into the show over GCN like everybody else, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, this story came up earlier today, and this is one where you just shake your head and say, okay, what's going on here? A senior aide to Pope Benny and one of the Vatican choristers have been sacked from the Vatican over allegations of involvement in a homosexual prostitution ring. And what this is, apparently police had been tapping the phone of Angelo Balducci, who holds the position of Gentleman to His Holiness. We don't know what that means, but that's the title. And they've been tapping his phone in connection with a corruption inquiry. When they found out that the chorister was procuring gay prostitutes for Mr. Balducci. It's not said if they were for Mr. Balducci's own personal amusement or if, in point of fact, he in turn was referring them to somebody else. And it's rather interesting. Now, let me sort of be upfront here and a little bit honest. I am an atheist. I'm a non-believer. But the reason I wanted to talk about this story is because I take tremendous exception to religiously inspired intolerance of homosexuality. And I just wanted to point out that if we are to stipulate, hypothetically, the existence of a God, and if we are to stipulate that this hypothetical God is omniscient, then he knows what these guys have been doing in the Vatican. And there was no bolt of lightning. They didn't even get a pink slip prior to this becoming public knowledge. And so I think, given all of these stipulations, we would have to assume that God is not only okay with homosexuality, but with prostitution and gay prostitution. Therefore, everybody who's out there screaming that gays are bad or the prostitution is bad, they're going against the expressed will of God here, I think. I could be wrong. Of course, the alternative theory is that there is no God at all, that religion is just another one of the many frauds foisted on humankind, and that we have another classic case of you all go live your lives the way that we tell you to, and we're going to do what we feel like inside the Vatican Palace, which would hardly be unique. And for those of you who want a really racy, juicy story, go back and look at the history of Pope Alexander VI, because along with carving up Asia between Spain and Portugal, saying that you have the right to go overthrow those governments and put Catholic rule in its place, Pope Alexander VI knew how to throw a party. And you might want to Google Bat of the Chestnuts, and enlightenment will fall upon you when you read that one. It is a very, very interesting and revealing story about life inside the Vatican. It's a beautiful place, by the way. I've actually been there. I've been to the Vatican. I got to see the Sistine Chapel ceiling while it was still undergoing that last restoration. And it is gorgeous. And you look at all those naked male bodies. Does make you do a lot of thinking there about Michelangelo and his employers. Michelangelo actually was a dog owner, dog lover. I agree with him with that. He had a Pomeranian, which apparently kept him company while he was painting the Sistine Chapel ceiling. So, you know, between that and those bright red Prada shoes that Pope Benny is wearing, I think we're beginning to get some insight into the Vatican throughout history. All right, now, moving right along to more serious situations. Speaking of, you know, religion, this is kind of interesting. Apparently, France, the bishops, somebody in France has set up a dial-a-confession line where it's a pay-to-call number, and you dial it, and you will simply speak whatever your sins are into this telephone system, and then it plays an absolution, and you go on about your business. So they're calling it Phone Line to the Lord, charges 30 cents a minute to confess their sins to an automated answering machine. Needless to say, the traditional clergy are a little upset with it. And I read the story. The first thing that occurred to me was this line from Eddie Izzard, who I absolutely love. If you've ever seen his his comedy specials, and he says, I poked a badger with a spoon. He says, oh, my goodness, that is an original sin, isn't it? And very, very funny stuff there. So that's from the world of the God biz here. Interestingly enough, somebody did a statistical study and discovered that the more intelligent a human being is, the more likely they are to break out of what is considered the religious preferences that are the norm in human society. In other words, the more intelligent you are, the more likely you are to be an atheist. And interestingly enough, the more intelligent you are, the more likely you are to be sexually monogamous, which is going to be very reassuring to my wife here. So in a nutshell, all of these athletes and politicians and celebrities who can't seem to keep their flies zipped, they're just exhibiting that they have a lower IQ, according to this statistical study. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Thomas in Sweden. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi. You talked about the Catholic Church and homosexuality. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not really a believer. I'm more a knower. I'm a agnostic, or a Gnostic, as we would say in English. But what I would like to see is somebody read their New Testament from front to back and show me anywhere where Jesus himself condemns homosexuality.
Well, you know about the secret book of Mark, right?
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. Verse 17 or something or other, yeah, with the initiation rite.
Yeah, yeah, that frankly, makes it look to me like Jesus possibly went both ways. But, you know, everybody reinterprets the Gospels to suit whatever their own personal agenda is, and over the years, certainly in the United States, you know, the rabid religious right just comes down on homosexuality, claiming that it's a sin. And you're right, I don't know which scripture they cite for that, but I just think, I find it offensive. You know, I find it offensive that they're waving the Bibles and screaming about, you know, gays are bad and all the rest of this stuff. And yet here we have, you know, God in the Vatican saying, go on, guys, you know, have fun. You know, nothing bad happened until it became public knowledge.
Well, you know this business when the soldiers come to the Garden of Gethsemane. Boy, that's a difficult one.
Yeah, that's the tongue twister.
Yeah, I'm using my own teeth today. And a youth runs out without any clothes on. Now, what was that all about?
That was a good one. And, of course, you know, the other one is that Jesus couldn't wake the boys up when the centurions were coming down on him, which tells me they were stoned. You know, come on. You know, it's like an old Cheech and Chong routine. Come on, man, the Romans are coming. You know, Dave's not here. And, you know, of course, at that particular period of time, the Holy Lands were the crossroads for the opium traffic going from Turkey down to Egypt and to Rome. That's why everybody wanted to conquer that eastern edge of the Mediterranean. That was where the drug money was. And and it wasn't illegal. It was part of life that you did opium and marijuana and all the rest of that. So, yeah, I think Jesus and his fellows were a bunch of stoners, and that's why he couldn't wake them up when the cops were coming to bust them.
Well, Jesus was all about love and peace. I mean, this sounds like 1968 or something.
Well, it does, and the historical Jesus wasn't always about love and peace. You know, there's that line of I come to bring a sword. And, of course, the execution by crucifixion was a Roman punishment for treason against the Roman Empire. So Pontius Pilate seems to have felt legitimately that he had evidence that Jesus was about ready to lead a revolt. And, of course, at that particular time in history, the Judeans were revolting, you know, all the time. There was one about the time Jesus was born. There was one about 40 years after he died, or supposedly died. And so that was a very real situation. Thomas, we got to let you go. We got to take a break. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
I think we're still having some technical issues. There we are.
Some are working two jobs and living in cars.
All right, all right. I think somebody's sending a hint. We need new bump music here. All right, welcome back to the show here. Let's pull it down and get into this thing. Last segment of our show today, and we still have a lot of stuff to talk about here. I have been warning you since the start of winter, when it became obvious that the forecasts of a mild winter were not going to work out, that the global warming hoaxers were going to come back in the spring, and it's starting to happen. Senator Lindsey Graham, South Carolina, has basically come out saying that the Republican Party has to support global warming, that it must embrace human-caused global warming because otherwise they risk losing some of their younger voters. And I bring this up because this underscores the fact that the debate over human-caused global warming is no longer about science. It is about politics. It's about creating an issue, a completely fraudulent one or pointless one, in order to try and secure votes. And I have no doubt that the GOP is going to hop on board the global warming bandwagon because it's politically expedient. Not because they believe in it, but because they think it will get them more votes. Remember, the political strategy this year, and we're already starting to see it, is to create issues that are irrelevant in order to keep the American voters from looking at the things that really affect their own life, the economy, the wars, the continued obeisance to Israel. So we're going to start seeing, and this is already starting to come up, they're going to try and revive gay marriage as an issue. They're going to talk about all these scandals in the political party as a distraction. Now they're going to be talking about human-caused global warming. And it's all to keep you off the things that really do affect your life. Remember, this government, during the economic boom times, was taking credit for all the wonderful economic progress. Bill Clinton in his magic budget surplus, which he got by looting Social Security. And now that the economy is in the Al-Qaeda, you know, the government has to be tied to it. They can't take credit for the good economy without taking the blame for the bad economy. So they're going to try between now and election in November. They're going to try and come up with a whole bunch of distracting issues. And this is going to be one of them. Because they can hammer it back and forth. And it's not because it's a hoax. It doesn't really matter what anybody votes on it. It doesn't really touch those core issues of excessive taxation and the wastage of the money on Wall Street and wars and Israel. And that's the real issue. That's the real issue. The wars, first and foremost, should be what controls your votes going into November, and they're not going to talk about that. They'll talk about security this and who's tough on terrorism and all the rest of that stuff. Now, predictably, the British Met Office, which only yesterday announced they were no longer going to do seasonal weather forecasting because they've been wrong so often, they've come back out with a new report saying, well, we've gone back and taken another look, and we still find evidence of human-caused global warming. So it's a repackage and rebrand. But it's still pushing the same agenda. The world is getting warmer. It's your fault. You must pay for it. We're seeing other stories coming out where they're trying to say, well, okay, this other science that supported global warming has been discredited, but we're finding new evidence that supports global warming that hasn't been discredited yet. Therefore, the theory... I'm sorry. If you have five pieces of evidence that support a given position, and one of them is proven to be a hoax, then probably all of them are hoaxes. Because if you have a real case, you don't risk destroying it with phony evidence. Had there ever been a genuine scientific basis for human-caused global warming, there would have been no need to rig the computer codes at Hadley CRU. There would have been no need to suppress opposing points of view. Because there wouldn't have been opposing points of view. There would have been no need for this nonstop multi-million dollar sales campaign to push this as an issue. They're coming back for another try. They think you are so stupid, you will not remember this harsh winter, you will not remember the ClimateGate emails, you will not remember Dr. Phil Jones doing a 180 and admitting that there wasn't any statistical support for warming over the last 15 years. They're hoping you will forget the videotape of the former head of Greenpeace admitting they just made up all the story about Greenland's ice cap melting in 20 years. They're going to come back with a whole new bunch of pretty printed pieces of paper and try and resell this to you. The European Union even now desperate for money because they're in debt like with everybody else. They're already considering a general carbon tax across the entire European Union. That's why this whole hoax was created. Take something that happens naturally, climate change, blame it on the people and guilt them out of taxes and surrender to global government. They're coming back for another try. There is so much riding on this hoax, they're going to come back for another try. Now, let's see, looking on down here, this is an interesting story. Somebody wants to use rats to help clear Africa's landmines. And everyone is saying, well, you know, the animal rights people aren't going to do anything because, after all, they're rats. You know, have you ever noticed that the animal rights people, and by the way, I'm not one of those who thinks animals have rights. They don't. Okay? Rights are something that we demand from our government under threat of revolution. And government will recognize, as they do in the Bill of Rights. But I don't believe animals have rights. I think we should be kind to them. Okay? And that when we decide we're going to kill them and put them on the barbecue, we should be as humane about it as possible. But all life forms prey on other life forms. And that's just the way nature works. I just get really kind of weirded out by seeing one group of humans thinking they have the right to financially prey upon other groups of humans, but that's another situation entirely. In any event, for all those who think it's okay to use rats to clear out the minefields, how would you feel if it was squirrels? Would you be offended then that they're going to use squirrels to find and detonate the landmines? Because after all, if you think about it, a squirrel is just a rat with a cute fluffy tail. So it's all about perception and packaging there. I think it's a silly idea. I think the rats are going to turn out to be too smart to step on the landmines after the first couple of them go off. They're very clever creatures, actually. Now, last couple of stories here. Right now, the current post-9/11 security terror industrial complex, they're about the only part of the economy that's really doing well. We're going totally nutso on building and buying machines that let you peek inside people's clothing, read their emails, listen to their phone calls, and so forth and so on. The newest one is called FAST, Future Attribute Screening Technology. This is being touted as a machine that reads minds. As you walk from the parking lot to your airport gate, this machine is going to attempt to determine your mental state. And if it is not serene, zen-like calm, you will be pulled aside for additional scrutiny. Now, I can tell you already from my own experience at the airport, the only thing this machine is going to be showing time after time after time is I am really ticked off. I am frustrated. I am angry. I am tired of being poked and prodded. In other words, I don't think this machine's going to work. I'm sure that in the demonstrations, it performed beautifully for the investors. So did the face scanners they had down in Miami, which generated something like 10,000 false positives and not one single real terrorist. Mostly because I don't think there are any real terrorists out there. I think they're all planted stooges, like our crotch bomber guy. But everybody's invested in building and selling these machines, and the government is just spending your money on all of these machines that do absolutely nothing. It's another con game. America has become the nation of the con artists and snake oil salesmen. We've lost our ability to make anything people want to buy. So the way American business gets done is you concoct some kind of a lame-o product, and you go to a congressman, you give him a bunch of money for his campaign, and then he will get the government to order people to use this product. Whether it's an airport scanner or vapor recovery nozzles on the gas pumps, which don't really do all that much to work, or mandated health insurance or mandated earphones for your cell phones while you drive, which also turned out not to make things any safer. Make a dumb product, get the government to order people to use it, and you become rich. That's the path to success in the United States of America. All right, that's it for our show. We're going to head off here. Have a good weekend. We'll be back Monday. Don't forget to tune in to the National Strike Conference call, which is going to start as soon as this program is over. Information for joining that call can be found at the top of whatreallyhappened.com. So thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Matt in our control room, who was just dealing with serious technological challenges. And aloha, America. We'll be right back.